Avavatu
Sahanau Bhunaktu Sahaviryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavaditamastu Mavidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Brinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Okay, so Srila Jiva Goswami's analysis on Shabda as a reliable method of proof in contrast to the other methods as follows. Sometimes the other proofs can support Shabda according to their ability. But because Shabda is independent, it can override the other proofs. Right? Just like what you see and what's the actuality that's given on Shastra, that might be different. Right? Because we don't know what to look for, we don't know how to look at things. Or the inability to perceive something. So Shabda, it stands whether the other proofs also support it or not. That's the important thing. Because otherwise, if they are independent also, then there'll arise a difficulty of different schools who use different proofs and this and that. But the point is, Shabda is the one that's always right. And the others you may or may not be able to appreciate, because these other nine are using your senses. Right? Your senses, other people, their senses, you know, all these different things. While Shabda, it's not. It's beyond the senses. It's transcendental. Yes?
Sometimes people ask, they do believe in scriptures,
right.
So it's Shabda.
Right.
And then doesn't matter what their senses say, they only believe in Shabda.
Right.
While others say that they do hear from Shabda, and also through pratyaksha they see it.
If they see it, what the scriptures say, through pratyaksha, then that means they have a good understanding. The point is no, Shabda is there, and then you apply it, then these others come. So Shabda says something, I don't see it. So then with Anuman, then I start to connect what Shabda says to what I'm looking at. Then, with time, by Krishna's grace, then I'm able to actually see it. So that's the process. Like that. But it's not that, I mean, Shabda is independent. That's the main point. So even if you don't see it, then it's just a matter of applying the process, then you will. Right? It is impossible for the other proofs to contradict matters indicated by Shabda. So there's no such thing as contradiction by using other. It means if you use Shabda against Shabda, that's one thing. Right? And that you know, one verse is saying this, you know, in the Upanishad it's talking about the dualistic aspect, and others talking about the monistic aspect. That then is something for discussion. But to say Shastra says this, but I see that, and that's an argument, that doesn't count. Right? And in matters that are not subject to their abilities, Shabda is the only effective methods. So, in the other ways of trying to understand these other evidences, other proofs, if they don't have an ability to actually function in that environment, then that's Shabda, then is the only effective. Right? Cause, so it's always Shabda, and then you add these others just to apply it, right? Because Shastra says something, you want to apply it in your life. To apply it, you have to be able to see the situation and how to apply it. Right? So then that comes down to the practical level. It's not that we need to see it to have faith in it. It's that by seeing it, then we can apply it. Right? But that we can't see it, that's not a fault in the scriptures. That's just our lack. Right?
We want to see it so that we can apply it.
But we want to see it so we can apply it, yes.
If you're not able to see it for a very, very long time, then that Shabda still remains the theory, and we need to still put on faith in it and carry on so that one day we will be able to see it. have it as a conviction.
Yes. Right. It's not a matter of theory, it's fact. It may be theoretical to us, but that's only due to our imperfection.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Other proofs, methods of gaining knowledge, is explained in order to gain knowledge of the correct method of proof. Arsha means words of the devas or sages. Upamana is knowledge based on similarity. A gavya is similar to a cow, right? You know the gavyas, the blue cows? They're similar to cows, but they're not cows. They're actually deer, right? They're a kind of deer, yeah. Blue cows.
And hence, mentions Arsha means words of the devatas or sages, and that is also Shabda.
That's why we're saying that they're all connected into the back to Shabda. Right? Means there are 10 proofs. Right? Of that, Shabda is the main. And so then Jiva Goswami, then when he's explaining in Tattva Sandarbha, he shows how these other 7 are already included within these 3. So if you have these 3, you have, you know, you have evidence, right? You have proofs. And these are just subsections within these 3 main areas. They're not separate sections. Yeah? Artapatti is making a conclusion from words and circumstances. Arta. With the form, it cannot be otherwise. Right, so that you're going through that, but that would mean then you're using the Anuman, right? Since he is fat and does not eat during the day, he must eat at night. Right? Could be he only eats at twilights. Right? So he neither eats in the day or the night. Abhava is not perceiving something. The senses do not contact an object and assume that it does not exist at that place. Right, so that will be a form of pratyaksha. But we're just saying, I can't see it, so it doesn't exist. Right? Sambhava is a probability. Sambhavana, using intelligence. 100 must exist in 1,000. Right? So you see, it's also the anuma. So you can see, they're all just subsections, just different. But because they are you know, they have a clear identity. So within that, the subcategories, then they have their names. Aitya is knowledge gained by tradition from unknown speakers. Cheshta is gesturing to indicate something, such as using the fingers to indicate 10 jars. Right? Moreover, knowledge gained through a method like pratyaksha cannot prove anything spiritual. This is the case of all animals, right? Because you can't prove something through your senses, since the senses are material. Their senses will accept or reject based on what is desired or detested. Right? So they're going to see something, they like what they see, then it's accepted. They don't like what they see, they reject. But that's not the authority. They can never accomplish spiritual perfection. And on the other hand, it is seen that some small children have all knowledge caused by the shabda gained from their parents. Without that, right? So sometimes the children will say something very, very, you know, substantial that you don't expect because they've heard it from the parents, and then they'll apply it into a situation that possibly the parents aren't due to their own, you know, interests and desires or perceptions. You know, but they're just saying what they've heard from authority. Without that, those who have been kept in isolation are dumb and cannot speak. They cannot even act properly. Right? So it's by always being around the parents, they can speak, they know what to do, you know, they can understand, they can do all these different things. And it's not necessarily that they're being specifically trained. They just pick it up from, you know, how you say? Yeah. Okay. Sri Vaishnavas say the following concerning this. Material perception, such as pratyaksha, full of ignorance, is confined to the area of ignorance related to material objects. The Vedas, however, are not full of ignorance and are proof even in matters concerning the world, since they are without human authorship and are eternal. As well, Jivan Muktas existing in this world in these kind of situations, don't put this Bhagavatam reference. Just put the full page as footnote. Because otherwise, then we're going to go to here and then have to come back. So this is just full footnote, and then this Bhagavatam verse reference will go to this page. Point is how do you save the page? Oh, you mean it'll just be a little bit more here? Oh, no, but there is another footnote here. This is a separate footnote.
This is the Bhagavatam verse reference
footnote. Oh, then it's fine. Then it's fine.
That's right.
Yeah, then it's fine. I thought there was the same one that kept going. No, then it's fine. Okay. As well, Jiva and Mukta is existing in this world until they give up their bodies, constantly recite the Vedas. And it will be shown that associates of the Lord, Atmaramas, endowed with the Chit Shakti and situated beyond ignorance, like the Lord Himself, by the mercy of the Lord, recite the Vedas with the bliss of bhakti, which surpasses the bliss of Brahman. Right? So there, these transcendentally situated personalities, they're discussing the Veda, but they're doing it from the viewpoint of bhakti. So then their stand that they're giving, that will be the supreme authority. Right? So then you're hearing it from great personalities. That's what's being said there. But what they're speaking is Shastra. So Guru, Sadhu, Shastra. The Sadhu is the Guru. They're speaking Shastra. That's what gives the authority. So that was that one that we saw before. What was that? Arsha. Right? Is that they're speaking it, you know, so we take it as authority. But what they're speaking is Shastra. Right? And the Supreme Lord promotes creation of the universe constantly while adhering to the rules of his own Veda. Right? So Krishna doesn't do something outside of it. You know, what are the rules? He always follows that. So we see the Acharyas, they also are always following. It's just that there may be traditionally followed one application of the rule, and they may use some other, either different rule or another application. Right? Means, in other words, the primary stays the same, but the secondary that you use. That you might see. But you'll never see that they don't do things according to Shastra. It's just that they'll take, you know, a different approach or a deeper meaning. You know, like this. Yeah. So, because Krishna doesn't do it, why would the others do it? Those who take the Vedas as material information composed by human knowledge cannot produce true knowledge since they lack non-human sources of knowledge and are subject to faults like Brahma, or illusion, right? They produce only material knowledge, like speech in a dream. Such ideas are non-Vedic, tattva sandarbha, right? So that's why we call it Vedic, because it's based on the Veda. If it's not based on the Veda, we won't call it Vedic, right? It may be Veda, but the person doesn't get the credit for it being Vedic. Because they're not accepting the authority of the Vedas. They think that they've created that knowledge. You know what I'm saying? Yes.
We know that some people, for example, especially in contemporary society, they take something that is given, and then they start to apply it, and with time, quite sure, then it becomes totally different, because they change a lot of details.
Yes.
And then can we still say that it's actually Vedic?
It would be Vedic, but it would be lacking the tradition. So that means it's Vedic, but it's an application. It's not an application as done by the great personalities. It's an application done by themselves. So it'll be based on the Veda, but it won't quite have that same refinement, or maybe even effectiveness, for the purpose. It may be effective in the secondary. You know, it's just like, let's say, After the water is, the argya is offered in the artik, then it goes around the room, and somebody comes up behind you, you don't even know they're there, and throws some on the back of your head. Okay, so the whole point is that everybody is getting some of this, you know, accepting or respecting this water from the conch by getting it on their head. Because when you're offering argya, it's offering above the head, because the person, you would pour that into onto their hands, and then they would sprinkle it on their own head. Right? And so you're accepting it on your head. Right? So, as far as that principle goes, when someone comes up and sprinkles on the back of your head, you are getting it on your head. Right? And so in that way, you could say the principle has been accomplished. But the difficulty comes is you don't know what's there and this and that, and it just kind of comes, and so you don't have the respect towards it that's supposed to be engendered by following the traditional process, while in front of you they throw the water so you can see it and properly, you know, receive that water. You know, so it's kind of like, yeah, the guest got into the house, but he was not actually properly received. You know, it'd be just like taking the guy and, you know, shooting with a cannon through the door and he lands on the couch. You know, so yeah, he's there. You know, but the whole thing of greeting, coming in, making him comfortable, sitting down, all that is lost. So that's why tradition is there, that is established by these great personalities. But if you find there's a tradition that's also the same, done by others, then it doesn't have as much importance. But you have to see then what practically works. You know, does that make sense? Yeah. Okay, so Bhagavatam verse reference, Srimad Bhagavatam 2.5.15. The Vedic literatures are made by and meant for the Supreme Lord. The demigods are also meant for serving the Lord as parts of his bodies. The different planets are also meant for the sake of the Lord, and different sacrifices are performed just to please him. Footnote 39. Srila Prabhupada concludes that all those books of knowledge whose final goal is not Narayana are useless and hence should be discarded. According to the Vedanta Sutras 113, Shastra Yoni Tvata, the Supreme Lord is the author of all revealed scriptures, and all revealed scriptures are for knowing the Supreme Lord. Right? Because as Vyasadev, he compiles them all. So Vyasadev is his empowered incarnation. Right, so then that means the Lord has given the Veda, and then the Lord comes to compile the Veda. Right? Veda means knowledge that leads to the Lord. That's the actual point. So we may see things that the materialists or those not following the Vedas as Veda, because we'll see it in connection to the Lord. And that's the actual only way you can see that all these different things are Veda. Right? Because you see the connection to the Lord. But otherwise, if you just see the connection to the Shastra, but just use it for intellectual, you know, enjoyment, then that's not actually the point, because Veda means knowledge that leads to the Lord. Because Krishna's given it. He's given it. He's compiled it. So it's about him, you know, for him. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the point of Veda. So just saying, oh, it's there and the Veda says this, so therefore I can do whatever I want here and this and that, that's actually technically not Veda. It may have come from the Veda, but how you're applying it and interpreting it is not. So in the same way, that same effort, with time, the Veda will be forgotten and just you do your activity that pleases yourself. Does that make sense? So that's why it always must be seen in that connection. Otherwise, without that connection, then things get lost. Right? The Vedas are just made just to revive the forgotten consciousness of the conditioned souls. And any literature not meant for reviving God consciousness is rejected at once by the Narayana Paraya devotees. Such deluding books of knowledge, not having Narayana as their aim, are not at all knowledge, but are the playgrounds for crows who are interested in the rejected refuse of the world. Right? So that's the point, is that if you can't see it connected to Krishna and can apply it in service to Krishna, then what's the point of that knowledge? We can say, oh no, but it's important, we need, but how? If you need, that means you can use it in service. But you have to be able to see that connection. Otherwise, then you might get distracted. Right? If you can't see the connection to Krishna, what's to keep you from going off in the wrong direction? Right? Ultimately, it's for Krishna, but we have to remember mixed devotional service means it's for Krishna and for something else. So if we don't understand how it connects to Krishna, then we can be guaranteed that there may be quite a mix. Right? If you say, do something, and you haven't instructed them, and so they just use their own intelligence or their own tradition, whatever they've learned, and use that, then they're engaged in Krishna's service. Right? But as time goes, you should be able to see the difference. Because just in case you don't get distracted by and get attached to one's own ideas. Right? Any book of knowledge, science, or art must lead to the knowledge of Narayana. Otherwise, it must be rejected. That is the way of advancement of knowledge. You can say, no, no, but we can't reject knowledge. Knowledge is so valuable. Oh, there's so many branches of knowledge that the person saying that is not interested in. And if you brought them a nice book on that, then they wouldn't be interested. Like, just like the person says that, and I bring in a nice, big, fat, you know, book, you know, coffee table size with lots of pictures and that, on the, you know, life cycle of the tsetse fly. You know, and plunk it down in front of them. Here, so study this. This is knowledge. No, no, I'm not interested. I have others. So the whole point is if it's just about what you're interested in. In other words, someone said we don't need this knowledge, but there's an area of material knowledge that somebody is interested in, and because of that, then they're saying, why should we reject knowledge? But the point is if you don't see it connecting to Krishna, why do you need it? If you do need it connected to Krishna, why you can, why wouldn't you use it? Right? It's there in your duties, you need to, you would use it. But if you don't need to, why would you study that? Right? It's a waste of time. That is the way of advancement of knowledge, right? Because then it's progressive, otherwise you get sidetracked. The supreme worshipable deity is Narayana. The demigods are recommended secondarily for worship in relation to Narayana, because the demigods are assisting hands in the management of the universal affairs. As the officers of a kingdom are respected due to their relation to the king, the demigods are worshipped due to their relation to the Lord. Without the Lord's relation, worship of the demigods is unauthorized. Avidhi purvakam. Right? So then you can see, yeah, we can worship demigods, but only in relation their relationship to Krishna. So can you explain their relationship? And if you can, and their worship's based on worshiping Vishnu, why do you need them? You can worship Krishna directly without the demigod. Right? And if someone's just worshiping the demigod, not connected to the Lord, then what's the point? So that's why we respect the demigods, but we don't need to worship them. Just as it is improper to water the leaves and branches of a tree without watering its root. Therefore, the demigods are also dependent on Narayana. The lokas, or different planets, are attractive because they have different varieties of life and bliss partially representing the Satchitananda Vigraha, Brahma Samhita 5.1. Everyone wants the eternal life of bliss and knowledge. In the material world, such an eternal life of bliss and knowledge is progressively realized in the upper planets. But after reaching there, one is inclined to achieve further progress along the path back to Godhead. Duration of life with a proportionate quantity of bliss and knowledge may be increased from one planet to another. One can increase the duration of life to thousands and hundreds of thousands of years in different planets. But nowhere is there eternal life. Right? So even though it may be, you can use it in a progressive way, it's still not eternal. So then how is it really a solution? Since the human life can do that also. And you can do it in 100 years. Well, they'll have to do it in their lifespan, which is much, much longer. So But one who can reach the highest planet, that of Brahma, can aspire to reach the planets of the spiritual sky, where life is eternal. Therefore, the progressive journey from one planet to another culminates in reaching the supreme planet of the Lord, Madhama, where life is eternal and full of bliss and knowledge. All different kinds of sacrifice are performed just to satisfy Narayana, with a view to reach him. And the best sacrifice recommended in this age of Kali is Sankirtana Yajna, the mainstay of the devotional service of the Narayana Parayana devotee. So this is the purport to the Bhagavatam 2.5.15.
Yes.
Okay. So then next Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam 6.16.51. All living entities, moving and non-moving, are my expansions and are separate from me. I am the supersoul of all living beings, who exist because I manifest them. I am the form of the transcendental vibrations like Omkara and Hare Krishna, Hare Rama, and I am the supreme absolute truth. These two forms of mine, namely the transcendental sound and the eternal blissful spiritual form of the deity, are my eternal forms. They are not material. Right? So the whole point, Krishna is beyond all this. And that's the point. Because he's transcendental, then he manifests everything else. And so that knowledge of how that manifestation works and how to reverse that and get back to him, that's what you're trying to do. 10.14.18. Have you not shown me today that both you yourself and everything within this creation are manifestations of your inconceivable potencies? First you appeared alone, and then you manifested yourself as all of Vrindavan's calves and cowherd boys, your friends. Next you appeared as an equal number of four-handed Vishnu forms, who are worshipped by all living beings, including me. And after that you appeared as an equal number of complete universes. Finally, you have now returned to your unlimited form as the Supreme Absolute Truth, the one without a second, right? So this one person, Krishna, then can take unlimited forms, manifest all these unlimited aspects, right? As it said before, he always acts according to Shastra. Therefore, whatever he's doing is actually what the Shastra is describing. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.3.28. All of the above-mentioned incarnations are either plenary portions or portions of the plenary portions of the Lord. The Lord Sri Krishna is the original personality of Godhead. All of them appear on planets whenever there is a disturbance created by the atheists. The Lord incarnates to protect the theists. Right, so he comes to reestablish the proper practice and understanding of the scriptures.
Has been described by the Shiva Goswami in some others as, in one word, inconceivable.
Oh, okay. Very nice. Yeah. So you should include that in there.
Okay.
Why you wouldn't? If that's the essence of the thing, then why wouldn't you put that? Yeah. Sutra 2.128. Atmani chaivam vichitras chahi. Atmani, in the Lord, cha, and. Evam, thus, vichitra, variegated, cha, and he, because. As various marvelous creations arise from desire trees or chintamani, according to authorities, so we can believe from scriptures that various creations arise from the Supreme Lord. The Puranas confirm this, right? So the whole point is everything is coming from Krishna, right? And without Krishna, they don't have a basis. But he's still transcendental at the same time. As you see, by the prayers of Brahma and these others, he's transcendental, and then at the same time he manifests all these things. Sutra Prakashika. The Sutrakar previous... Yes.
Sorry. This verse, we are speaking about that everything comes from Shastra, and Shastra is the basis.
Yes. But it's also that, remember, why did we get into that? We got into that because there's an idea that Brahman can't be the creator. Right? So we're establishing, because their idea is that if he creates, then he'll be contaminated by that creation. And so then you're showing he's transcendental even though he's creating. Does that make sense? And the authority for that is the Shastra. Because then the verses that say that, they're not accepting in that way. So he can do that, and the Shastra explains it that way. The Sutrakar previously proved in Vedanta Sutra 112, Janmadyasya Yadaha, that Brahman is the cause of creation. Followed by that in Vedanta Sutra 113, Shastra Yoni Tvat, it was confirmed that the source of understanding the Supreme Lord is scriptures. Hence, in the current sutra, when the scriptures speak of desire trees and their stunning productions, it shouldn't be astonishing. If this is inconceivable, then why should unnecessary logic be applied to the inconceivable Lord, who is the footing of inconceivable objects such as desire trees or chintamani? So in other words, that transcendental position, we shouldn't be amazed by this, or no, that's not possible, because Shastra says so, and so that's the whole point, right? Is that inconceivable element. See, because why do we have to emphasize this inconceivable element, right? Because we tend to think that we're so intelligent and that we can understand everything, right? Especially the smarter someone is, the more they're convinced of that, you know, until you come to, you know, when you get up to, you know, 170 plus, or even from 160, they're so convinced that they can understand everything through their intelligence, that their ego is like expanded to the size of the universe. So we have to establish that, no, it's inconceivable because it's beyond your intelligence. You cannot understand the Lord through your intelligence. It's only when Krishna reveals himself, that's how you can understand. Yeah? Yeah. Sri Govindabhasya, Siddhanta. Through authoritative sources, we learn about and believe in marvelous creations, Vichitra, like elephants and horses, which arise from the desire tree, or Chintamani, due to the inconceivable powers arising from the Lord's vibhutis. Therefore, we should believe in the wondrous creations of devatas, men and animals, by the Supreme Lord, Vishnu, Atmani. We should not logically ask if these things are created by the whole sarup of the desire tree or by a part of it, since the only way we can obtain knowledge of the nature of inconceivable objects is authoritative sources. Right? So now, going and analyzing which part of the tree made it. You know, did that come from the leaves or from branches? On the leaf is the top part or the bottom, and then on that the leaf has a little split. Is that right half or left half? There's no need to get into that because it's inconceivable. It doesn't work that way. Right?
We see that people, because right here it's explained that we should, on one hand, use our intelligence, and on the other hand, we should accept the words of the Vedas.
Yes.
And some people get really bewildered. Because what they do, they either blindly accept everything without understanding, or if they know a bit more speculatively natured, then they doubt everything because they use their intelligence on things they shouldn't.
Yeah, but are either of these positions that dynamic?
No.
But of the two, which one will be better?
First.
Yes. Because at least they accept the Shastras. So at time as they get purified, then their intelligence will start to work and they'll be able to see it, even though they're simple. While the second person, they'll never understand anything. See, the point is that the first one, they're accepting that they don't know, and so the Shastra says, and they have faith in that, and they accept that. So they're actually faithful. Well, the second person actually puts faith in their own intelligence. They don't have faith in the scriptures. And so they actually can't learn anything. So both of them are going to be an impediment, but the one will work itself out. But the second one will never work itself out. They don't even get out of the gate. Because they'll doubt everything and they'll have that. So if they can't understand it, then it doesn't exist. So it's a Buddhistic philosophy. So it's atheistic, it's not real. So that's the point that's being made here is that intelligence is there. So, and we see it's either one or the other. You know, they'll say, so I suggest with blind faith? No, why not have some faith? It's either blind faith or no faith. So it's like, what's the point of the conversation? right? Because they're not interested to learn. They don't want to hear that their intelligence is not great enough to understand everything. They don't believe, they don't trust, they don't have faith and all that. So they have social issues. So how is the social issues are used to control or restrict spiritual points? Right? And then their social issues have to be pushed on everybody else. This is just straight up mundane. You know what I'm saying? Someone tries to avoid these pitfalls. So the point is you use your intelligence, but you have to understand it's not by your intelligence you'll understand. It's using your intelligence in the service of Krishna, then Krishna will reveal. So intelligence is used, but it's not because you're using it. That's why you understand. Okay. We should not logically ask if these things are created by the whole sarupa of the desire tree or by part of it, since the only way we obtain knowledge of the nature of inconceivable objects is authoritative scriptures. Similarly, we should not question about the Lord. The statements should be accepted as they are in the scriptures. The locative case is used, atmani, in the desire tree, etc., to indicate that the Lord is the support for various objects. The second cha indicates that if we accept the case of inconceivable production from desire trees, how much more we should accept the productions of the Lord. The word he indicates that this is confirmed by the Puranas. Therefore, one should accept that Brahman is the creator. So in other words, that faith aspect is there. But you can say, no, but I'm intelligent, I have this and that. Okay, so let's go down and catch the bus. You know? And so then, as we're going down to catch the bus, because that person who's generally, analytical and prides themselves in all these things, generally they tend to be on time for the bus, right? And so you lag behind, you do this, you get that, and they'll be getting all agitated and everything, right? And so then the thing is then what's the problem? We're going to miss the bus. It says, how do you even know the bus is going to come? How do you even know that the bus is there? That was yesterday. Why today there's a bus? Have you seen it? Have you perceived it? Yeah, so the whole point is they have faith. So that's the point, is they decide what things they have faith in and what's not. So things they like the bus, so therefore they have faith in that. And things that they don't, like Shastra telling them that they're through their intelligence, they can't understand transcendence, they don't like that. So that's the whole point. They put their faith in all these. You get in an elevator, you have faith it's going to take you to the floor there. What if it doesn't? What if it's like, what is it, that one, the Charlie Chocolate Factory one, where you push the button, you end up in the sky flying around? Do you want that? So that's not the way you want it. You push the button, you end up, you're, how you say, Times Square, and you end up down in the finance district, because it goes sideways. Is that what you want? And then you think, okay, that's cool. Instead of taking the train, I'll take the elevator. And the next time, it just takes you the other way. You end up in Harlem. Right? So that's the whole point, is people have faith. The scientists have faith in their numbers and their calculations and their intelligence. So that's the whole point, is people have to have faith. So it's just a matter of where you're going to put the faith. So now when you have faith in the scriptures and then you apply with that faith the intelligence to using it, then you'll see that you get the results and you actually understand it. So this idea is you have faith and you never understand. We're not saying that. So we're not talking dogmatic here. We're talking that it can be analyzed according to its application in devotional service in your life. That you want to do. Right? Then you'll understand. Right? It's not that, it can't be discussed. It's that you can't understand just with intelligence anyway, so why discuss it? I have a thermometer here and that, so I want to measure how long this hut is. It's kind of like thermometers don't measure length. Why you're being dogmatic and all that, I just, like that. So that one doesn't work. No, but I feel, you're blocking me. I'm enthusiastic to do this, and you don't want me to do, you don't want anyone to do anything, you just want to control everything yourself. Right? Mm-hmm. Right? See, now, Sammy, you can go on and on and on. What do you mean? My father, my grandfather, my great-grandfather, we've all measured this hut with this thermometer. You know? You're saying, so there's so many mundane ways you can approach it. But the point is it doesn't have the ability. Therefore, when you have the basic sources of knowledge, is Shabda is the one that always works, and the other nine are based on your senses and ability and intelligence, so they don't always work. So that's why if it's not seen in connection with Shastra, then it's not of any use. So yes, you apply it. You can't doubt Shastra. Now you use your intelligence to apply it. Right? But it's by Krishna's grace. But you can't doubt Shastra. That's why it says don't read many books. Read those books that you're going to not doubt. Right? You know, we even see is that some of the acharyas in the introductions to their books. Point out that if you don't have faith in pure devotional service, don't read this book. Just put it down. That's it. Because that's what it's about. Nectar of Devotion does. Rupa Goswami uses it. And I think Kavi Karnapur, he uses that in his introduction. Even, I think... I think in one place he uses also, I can never remember the Gaur-lila name, Satyabhama in Gaur-lila. Jagannanda Pandit. He also very strongly says that. The word he indicates that this is confirmed by the Puranas. Therefore, one should accept that Brahman is the creator. Bhagavatam verse reference. 823.8. O my Lord, your pastimes are all wonderfully performed by your inconceivable spiritual energy, and by her perverted reflection, the material energy. You have created all the universes. As the supersoul of all living entities, you are aware of everything. And therefore, you are certainly equal toward everyone. Nonetheless, you favor your devotees. This is not partiality, however, for your characteristic is just like that of a desire tree, which yields everything according to one's desires. So, even though he is creating everything, he's unaffected because he does it through his energies, which transform into the external energies that do the work. So if he doesn't work with the external energy, only with the internal, how will he be affected? Right? Plus, all these things are already him, so why would something that's already him affect him? Right? So that's the whole point. Yeah. And so but at the same time is that he's equal to everyone, but he favors the devotees. So it's not that he's affected by it, because it's devotion that is he reciprocates with that. So wherever people put their devotion, right? So the impersonal devotion they put, they get the results in the impersonal. And then they have it in the personal, that means with the Lord, then they get the results there. Does that make sense? Because then the personal means it's generic. You know, your work, a body of knowledge, a particular skill. It's a generic thing, that the knowledge of a particular skill is a generic knowledge. Anybody could learn it if they apply themselves. Right? It has the same rules. Somebody applies themselves more, they get more benefit. Someone applies less, they get less benefit. Right? But it's generic. It's Krishna, but it's the impersonal. But then when it's about the person, then you get the results in that personal exchange. Okay. 7.3.34. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the Supreme, who, in his unlimited, unmanifested form, has expanded the cosmic manifestation, the form of the totality of the universe. He possesses external and internal energies, and the mixed energy called the marginal potency, which consists of all living entities, right? So all these things come from him, and so he's the one who is performing these. So Shastra says this, we accept. Sutra 2.129. Sopakshe doshach cha. Sopakshe, in the opponent's view, doshat, because of the defect, cha, and, right? See, this doshat somehow or another does not apply in the, how you say, it does, well, it does, depending on where you go, but generally in the restaurant doses, you know, it generally doesn't apply, right? But even there sometimes. But then much of the time that's the waiter or other things like that creates the, you know, imperfection, right? But generally the home ones, then you can find plenty of these things. Yeah? No? Yes. Yes. It's a good thing that chapati is not part of it. So pakshe chapati cha. Yeah. Chapati is not Vedic. It means the chapati itself is not Vedic.
Chapati itself is Vedic. It is not called as Vedic. That is Vedic. Chapati itself is an English word. So
Vedic. Chapati is an English word.
This is what people say that Britishers have got this particular concept, referring to this chapati.
Really? In English, you call it flatbread.
Yeah, that's one of those. It's just a name of the same.
In the West, people will use the term flatbread. I have never heard chapati anywhere in the West. Have you heard it in London? Chapati, as far as British using. Because they don't make them.
Pita.
Hmm?
They make pita bread.
Yeah, pita bread. Matzah. Oh well, whatever. And so Fulka is also English?
Fulka is English. It's English.
And Kakri?
Marathi.
Your proposal cannot be accepted because the fault of the whole jiva being involved with creation cannot be answered by you. Oh, didn't you know that there's whole jivas, half jivas, quarter jivas? Okay, Sutra Prakashika. You know, we're just distinguishing between those that are, you know, processed and those who are, you know, still, you know, whole jivas.
Those
and
like, wholesome,
yeah. Yeah, you know, and then there's also whether they're, you know, organic or not, or, you know, those kinds of things. Yes, yeah, well, most like to be free range, yes. Okay, so Sutra Prakashika, the proposal that Brahman is the creator and not the jiva should be accepted because the opponent's erroneous proposition. Sri Govindabhasya. In your swa proposal that the jiva is the creator, there is also the fault of the whole jiva being involved in the creation rather than a part, which you cannot refute. This fault is eliminated when Brahman is the creator. No? Okay. Okay. It comes from the before the discussion about that there's no parts to the jiva. So then you're saying a part is creating and a part is an illusion and a part is this and like that, so you can't have that. So the whole jiva would have to be involved in that. So if the whole jiva is involved, then why don't they know about the creation? Right? In other words, if you created all of this, wouldn't you know it? You know, so. Yeah.
For example, in our Krishna consciousness, part of the jiva is Krishna conscious sometimes, and part is not pretty, it's Mishra Bhakti. So
okay.
What can you say about this? If we are able to do that, we might not be able to do the whole creation.
Means you can't even get lunch together properly without dropping something, and then the whole creation is going to work perfectly?
Just this part, I don't really understand. Because we have
parts. But that's the point, there is no parts. So if you're absorbed in Maya, you're absorbed in Maya. You're absorbed in Krishna, you're absorbed in Krishna.
But we are perfectly fine doing two things at once, at least.
Yeah.
Mishra Bhakti. Part Maya, part Krishna.
But it's a complete Mishra Bhakti.
We usually say that it's part still for Krishna. When we remember.
But Mishra Bhakti means that it's partly for Krishna. But we're not the part. Bhakti may have parts. But why do we need parts?
It's nice to have.
The Shastra says there's no parts to the jiva. They're just one jiva. Right? And so then the Shankyites, and they're bringing out this point that the jiva is creating everything. But the point is he's not in control of it, so it's only part of it is doing or something. You know what I'm saying? They end up, see, the difficulty comes up is they're having to speculate on things that they can't answer. And so that's what his point's being made here, is that their proposal, it can't be, because they're the, they can't establish that there's parts to the jiva, because the scriptures don't say that there's parts of the jiva. So somehow or another in their presentation of the philosophy, then there is a presentation about this parts that makes their philosophy work.
But his philosophy of parts seems to be very convincing.
Very convincing. Why is it convincing? That the point is we haven't come across the parts yet. It hasn't been explained here.
In the last Adhikaram we saw about how the jiva, he puts his entire power in lifting a stone. And lifting a straw of grass, he doesn't put the entire power in there. Therefore, that was in some way that he's fully into it and he is partly into it. Therefore, that question parts me.
So we need to go back because you're not convinced.
No, I'm convinced. But still, somehow, you know, there is full. Yeah, you said very good example you gave about the range in the sound system, but it has one bit and numbers, and then that's what the potential of Krishna is working on. That's somehow, you know, this part.
And why do the parts come up? What is their usage of these parts? Why is it important to the Shankyites that there's parts?
Because the jivas are part and parcel of the Brahman. So if they can also become Brahman.
So the jivas being part of Brahman cannot do what?
There's a possibility of him to become Brahman.
There is a possibility or there's not a possibility?
There is a possibility.
So the jiva can become Brahman because he's a part of it. Mm-hmm. So what has that got to do with the jiva having parts?
Because in the daily affairs it has not been seen that the jiva is using, that the jiva is using part of his, is executing his parts there. As even Mahaji made the example that he came three, four things at the same time, sparingly going on. So then it's been working in terms of parts, you know. At the same time, are they doing something on the gas stove, are they doing something on the laptop, are they doing something?
In other words, this section here, Sutra Prakashika and everything, is not actually covering the material. Okay, so we'll move on to the next one. Bhagavatam 6.9.42. O Lord, as the small parts of a fire cannot possibly perform the actions of the whole fire, we sparks of your lordship cannot inform you of the necessities of our lives. You are the complete whole. Therefore, of what do we need to inform you? Right? Because we don't have the ability to tell him because he already knows, because we're part of him. You know everything because you are the original cause of the causal manifestation, the maintainer and the annihilator of the entire universal creation. You always engage in your pastimes with your spiritual and material energies, for you are the controller of all these variegated energies. You exist within all living entities, within the cosmic manifestation, and also beyond them. You exist eternally as Parabrahman and externally as the ingredients of the material creation. Therefore, although manifested in various stages at different times and places and in various bodies, you, the personality of Godhead, are the original cause of all causes. Indeed, you are the original element. You are the witness of all activities, but because you are as great as the sky, you are never touched by any of them. You are the witness of everything as Parabrahman and Paramatma. O Supreme Personality of Godhead, nothing is unknown to you. 6.4.30. The Supreme Brahman, Krishna, is the ultimate resting place and source of everything. Everything is done by him. Everything belongs to him, and everything is offered to him. He is the ultimate objective, and whether acting or causing others to act, he is the ultimate doer. There are many causes high and low, but since he is the cause of all causes, he is well known as the Supreme Brahman, who existed before all activities. He is one without a second and has no other cause. I therefore offer my respects unto him. Adhikaran 11. Endowment of all Shaktis. Sarvo Peta Nikaranam. Sutra reference 2.1.30. Adhikaran Prakashita. The Adhikarana certifies that Brahman possesses all powers. Later in his work, the Sutrakar in Vedanta Sutra 3.2.11, Na sanatopi parasya yo bhaya lingam sarvatrahi, verifies that the Lord is non-dual, but manifests himself into unlimited forms simultaneously at various locations via his unlimited inconceivable shaktis. Hence, what is the difficulty for the Supreme Lord to create the universes? He creates the world only by a fraction of his energy. Further ahead, in the same pada, the Sutrakar proves that why Brahman is all-powerful. Vedanta Sutra 3.2.37. Tatanya Pratishedhat defines that Brahman is the highest and there is nothing superior to Brahman, because this is the verdict of the Shrutis. Hence, Brahman is all-powerful, since no one is equal to him or greater than him. Summary of Adhikaran 11. Shamshaya. So the doubt, is the Lord suitable as a creator or not, since false claims of him have been made? Purvapaksha. He is not suitable. So now this is their presentation. He is not suitable. So they're saying, is he suitable or not? So now,
What do you mean
suitable? Suitable means, having the ability, like that. He is not suitable because scriptures say the Lord does not have shaktis. Satyam jnanam anantam brahma. Brahma is unlimited existence and knowledge. Sat eva saumyedam agra asit. O gentle one, only Sat existed in the beginning. Chandogya Upanishad 6.2.1. It is seen that only a person who possesses shakti, like a carpenter, can perform wonderful actions. Something without Shakti, Brahman cannot do this, right? Because they're not even taking it that Sat existence is a potency of the Lord, right? They're just taking it for granted, just like physicists work in space and time, but they just take it for granted. They don't know how those come about or anything. Where did it come from? Did the primordial, microbe create time or space or anything? The original, microbe had a Rolex watch but in those days he used pocket watches since he didn't have arms. So, it wouldn't fit on his wrist. So it took, so many billions of years. And finally then in whatever it is, somewhere in the early 1900s, then they came up with a wristwatch and all that. So, yeah.
What's the problem with energy?
because if there's energies, then Brahman's doing everything. Again, comes down to, and then they have to be surrendered to Brahman. Right? They have to surrender. While if Brahman doesn't have energies, we have energies, then we're something. We're celestial. We got something even God doesn't have. You know, there's always going to be these things. And then if they're looking at the negative side, so therefore Brahman has nothing, we have these, we get rid of all these, then we become Brahman.
We need
they're the controller here, and then they become the controller there. So that's because material means you're always going to be thinking, I'm the controller and enjoyer. Always. Siddhanta, Srila Vyasadeva refutes this proposition in the next sutra. Sutra 2.130. Sarva upeta chatad darshanat. Sarva, all powers, upeta, endowed with, cha, and, alone, tat, that, darshanat, because it is seen. The Lord is endowed with all shaktis, because that is seen in scriptures. Sutra Prakashika. The Shrutis and Smritis describe the Lord to be fully equipped with unlimited shaktis. It is through these shaktis that he performs various actions, karmas. Formerly, the Sutrakar confirmed the same in Vedanta Sutra 1.4.16, Jagat Vachitvat, that the Supreme Personality of Godhead has the karma action of creating the Jagat, universe. Hence, the Supreme Brahman is the creator. Govindabhasya, Siddhanta. The word cha is used for emphasis. The Supreme Lord alone is endowed with all shaktis. Upeta comes from upetri, one who is endowed. Paramatma is endowed with all shaktis. Why? That is seen, tad-darshanat, in many Shruti statements. Apashyan devatma shaktim swaguner nigudham. They saw the Lord's own shakti, hidden by his qualities. Svetasvatara Upanishad 1.3. So you see his qualities, and so you don't notice the shaktis that are doing the work. But it's pointing, if he has those qualities, there's the shaktis in which he gets everything done. Otherwise, your different moods and attitudes then are going to be appreciated through their application. Right? But now if the mood is very, prominent and all that, you don't even notice the activity. Like someone's very expert at doing something and they're very confident. What you'll notice is their confidence. You won't notice the expertise. But it goes together because it's natural someone with that confidence, why would that be there unless they have that? Does that make sense? Because if you see they go to apply it, it doesn't work. They lose the confidence. The mood changes. The
An example can be like when Krishna came to Mathura first time, then he killed Kamsa. When he meets his parents, they saw his shakti.
Right.
But when he talked like a child, then because of his quality of childishness,
Then it shifts. Ya eko varno bahudha shakti yogat. He is one. He is of one type, but is many because he is endowed with shakti. Right? He's one, but he's many because through these shaktis he does so much. Svetasuttara Upanishad 4.1. Parashya shaktir vividhaiva shuyate. It is said that the Lord has various shaktis. Svetasuttara Upanishad 6.8.
Just here one more point is, like many of the views of the opponents, like Shankites or Mayavadis, is more of the actual point, like the Supreme Lord, he has his shaktis and how he is doing that. That thing they put on themselves, as a jiva, I am also doing.
Yes.
That's why this concept of jiva being divisible, because it said like we are all separated parts and parcels of the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
They are just using that concept and just trying to superimpose on themselves.
Yes, but going the other way, then they don't accept it there. In other words, to establish their own authority, they'll use it, but to establish Brahman, then they won't use it.
That's why this point that the Lord is endowed with various shaktis disproves the very point that the jiva himself is having parts, then he should prove how his shakti
is doing everything.
Doing everything.
Yeah.
But it is proven that he doesn't have shakti, he has imperfection.
Yeah. Yeah, because otherwise then why is he miserable?
Yes.
You know, why would you create a place that you're miserable? You know what I'm saying? It's just like, let's say, mankind, modern man has produced, you know, all their highway system that creates traffic jams. And so that will always be seen as a bad thing. Right? Because it creates misery. So why would they do that? Right? It just comes, they're trying to make themselves happy, but they end up making themselves not happy. Right? So it's not that it's some glory. But the Lord, when he does things, then he's happy. He's fine. Everything works properly.
See, all the three sandarbhas, Bhagavad sandarbha, and Paramatma sandarbha, and Krishna sandarbha, the ultimate point brought out is the shaktis of Lord are his own, which is beyond the modes of material nature. So this disproves or clears all the doubts, okay, how the Lord is doing everything.
Yeah, because we don't have shaktis. We are a shakti, you know. And even he has his internal post says, has the Swarup Shakti, has these also various shaktis within. But we are just one shakti. And we're, you know, so we don't have other aspects. Yeah. So we have to take shelter of these greater shaktis. Because they have that variety and all that. We don't. Yeah, thanks. Thank you. The Smritis also describe the Lord's Shaktis. Vishnu Shakti Para Prokta. One Shakti of Vishnu is said to be supreme, Vishnu Purana. These Shaktis are inconceivable. Apani Padoham Achintya Shaktihi. I am without hands and feet and have inconceivable Shakti. Kaivalya Upanishad. Atmeshvaro Tarkya Sahasra Shaktihi. The Lord has thousands of inconceivable Shaktis. Srimad Bhagavatam 333. The Lord is an agent or doer through his inconceivable Shaktis. The Lord's Swarup is described with words like Satyam Jnanam Anantam. His Shaktis are described with phrases like Devatma Shakti. Sweta Sutara Upanishad 1.3. Thus, the Sarupa Brahman possesses Shaktis. Because of this, his decision to act is described in various texts. So, kamayata. Oh, that's the word. So, kamayata. That's, he desired. Tadakshata. He glanced. Both types of statements concerning his Sarup and his Shaktis are valid since they are all Shruti. Bhagavatam verse reference. Srimad Bhagavatam 3.33.3. My dear Lord, although personally you have nothing to do, you have distributed your energies in the interactions of the material modes of nature. And for that reason, the creation, maintenance, and dissolution of the cosmic manifestation take place. My dear Lord, you are self-determined and are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For all living entities, for them you created this material manifestation, and although you are one, your diverse energies can act multifariously. This is inconceivable to us. Srimad Bhagavatam 3.22.21. Lord Sri Krishna is the Lord of all kinds of threes, and is independently supreme by achieving all kinds of fortune. He is worshipped by the eternal maintainers of the creation, who offer him the paraphernalia of worship by touching their millions of helmets to his feet. The Sutrakar indicates that all the subsequent adhikarnas until the end of Pada 1 resolutely bring forth the apparently contrasting qualities of the Supreme Lord, such as 1. He is one but many. 2. He has no senses but he can catch and grasp. 3. He creates without gain. He is impartial but partial to the devotees. These and many more qualities and ornament. These and many more qualities ornament and beautify the Supreme Lord. Footnote 40. The Supreme Lord walks and does not walk. He is far away, but he is very near as well. He is within everything, and yet he is outside of everything. Ishopanishad, Mantra 5. Srila Prabhupada comments as follows. With our limited fund of knowledge, we cannot accommodate such contradictions, and therefore we conceive of the Lord in terms of our limited powers of understanding. For example, the impersonalist philosopher of the Mayavad school accept only the Lord's impersonal activities and reject his personal feature. But the members of the Bhagavat school, adopting the perfect conception of the Lord, accept his inconceivable potencies, and thus understand that he is both personal and impersonal. The Bhagavatas show that without the inconceivable potencies, there can be no meaning to the words Supreme Lord. So, Adhikarana 12. Is the Lord without senses? Vikara natva adhikaranam. Sutra reference 2.1, 31, 32. Adhikaranam. Prakashika. This Adhikarana certifies that the Supreme Lord is the possessor of potencies and senses as well. Towards the finale of his work, the Sutrakar in Vedanta Sutra 4.16, Adityadi Matayas Changa Upapattehe, confirms that the scriptures state that the Lord's senses are the cause of various objects. The Lord's mind gives birth to the moon. His ears give birth to Vayu and Prana. His eyes give birth to the sun, etc. Hence the Lord's senses are inconceivable in nature. Also the Sutrakar in Vedanta Sutra 3.3.63.64, Angeshu, Yata, Shraya, Bhava, and Shishtescha, confirms that the devotee should meditate on qualities of the Lord's senses, because this is the teaching of Brahma, the secondary creator. For example, one should meditate on the Lord's soft smile, pleasing words in his mouth, merciful glance in his eyes, etc. Hence, the Lord possesses transcendental senses that gain his devotees' liberation. Summary of Adhikarana 12, Purva Paksha. Brahman cannot be the creator since he has no senses. Though devatas have shakti, they also have senses that allow them to perform actions. Brahman is without senses. How can Brahman then create the universe? The Shrutis state that Brahman is without senses. Apani pado javano grahita pashyat yachakshus sa shrinot yakar naha saveti vedyam nachatasya yasti veta tam ahur agriyam purusham mahantam. Without feet he moves, and without hands he grasps. He sees without eyes, and hears without ears. He knows what is to be known, but he is not the knower. They say he is the chief, great person. Sveta Sutari Upanishad 3.19. Right? So they use these same things that we would use, but they try to prove the opposite. They're using that, see, he has no feet. But the point is Brahman is unchanging. That how is he moving? How is he hearing? How is he the supreme or greatest person? Right? Siddhanta, Srila Vyasadeva, refutes this proposition in the next sutra. We will hear from the next sutra tomorrow.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandini.